hour four of the show. Luke Lipinski, Max Starks in for Doug and Wolf, joining us now on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line, ESPN's Amin El-Hassan. Amin, thanks for the time this morning. We'll start you right off with some summer league because we're all pretty eager to see what the Suns can bring to the table when the regular season starts. A lot of their guys were there for summer league. What did you see from Phoenix the last week or so?
Well, I mean, I think DeAndre Ayton comes steals all the headlines there. Just really active, great around the rim, great hands. And, you know, I told this story on our podcast at Hoop Collective on ESPN about watching Kristaps Porzingis at his first summer league. And his numbers didn't pop out, but watching him play, one of the hardest things is for bigs to play at summer league because it's a very guard-driven environment, meaning the ball's in the guard's hands. Often these guards either A, aren't very good, or B, aren't very experienced. Either way, for them, that means ignoring the bigs a lot. So for big guys at summer league, a lot of times, they get frustrated and then kind of just get lost in the sauce because why should I set screens hard? Why should I do all the right things if I'm never rewarded for it, if my teammates never look at me? But Porzingis, even though he had awful guards he was playing with and never looked for him, kept doing the right thing over and over and over again, four games into his summer league. And I was watching and I said, he's going to be all right. Because he's got the tools, but more importantly, he's got the mentality to do the right thing even when no one else is doing the right thing around you. And Ayton's numbers obviously are a lot better than Porzingis' was in his debut summer league, but it's a little bit of the same thing going on. You know, there's a lot of times, you know, they couldn't even throw an entry pass into him, but that didn't stop him from trying to do the right thing again on the floor, and I think that's very encouraging.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned that Hoop Collective podcast, which you were on that with my high school buddy, Nick Friedell. Yeah. So there was a picture that was posted by Nick. Was that you? Was that your hotel room that you were laying down on the Chase Lounge by the window with the microphone? Mm-hmm. Was that your room? Because I saw the sneakers in the window.
As you can see, the palatial estate, that was not my room. That is someone with much higher standing at ESPN than me. Her name is Cassidy Hubbard.
Ah, and okay.
Cassidy came to Vegas with two checked bags. One with her clothes, and then she literally had a suitcase with just sneakers. I don't think she doubled up once her entire time in Vegas.
Wow,
she saw that row of sneakers. Yeah, she's a huge sneakerhead, and she was definitely flexing on everybody.
Well, okay, so I had to get that out there. But what are your thoughts on the Devin Booker max contract that he signed with the Suns?
Well, you know, I think, first of all, if you think about Phoenix, it's a team that's been searching for an identity for quite a while and a face of a franchise. And you know, Devin's kind of stepped into that and embraced that role when really that wasn't his. You know, when you think about when he got drafted, people thought he was going to be a pretty good player, but no one, I think, expected him to be not only this good, but also this charismatic. You know, there's a different level of being a face of the franchise that goes beyond your play on the floor. It's the willingness to accept kind of the responsibilities of being the face of the franchise, being basically the representative that when people think of the Phoenix Suns, they think of Devin Booker. And for a guy that young to be able to navigate that well, I can't remember who I was talking to yesterday, but the comparison I made was Damian Lillard. Not in terms of game, just in terms of a guy who was drafted and not expected to be that type of player, and then very quickly assuming that role and doing it very smoothly. Definitely, I like the move. And I'm sure Devin and his dad are pretty ecstatic about it as well, $154 million. But, you know, the idea here is that, okay, you planted your flag, Phoenix, with Booker. See it through. Because we've seen other guys come and go where they were the talk of the town and the toast of the franchise, and then because people get frustrated with the lack of winning, this relationship sours, and all of a sudden they become the villain. So whether it was Goran Dragic or whoever, you know, this is an opportunity for the Suns to say, no, those days are behind us. We've got our plan, we've got a vision, and we're going to see it through.
talking to ESPN's Amin El-Hassan, maybe along those same lines. I mean, Isaiah Thomas was here, and I guess didn't really end all that well. Now it sounds like he's going to Denver. But, you know, he's somebody I wouldn't have minded seeing back here if it was feasible. Maybe it wasn't. But just in terms of his career arc, it's been so weird. He was so good 2 years ago, and then so many odd things happened to him since then. But do you see Denver as a place where maybe he can resurrect his career?
I hope he does. You know, a lot of times when we talk about guys who got hurt and, you know, oh, they weren't allowed, basically their bodies did not allow them to have the careers they wanted, whether it's Penny Hardaway or Grant Hill or Tracy McGrady or, you know, Brandon Roy, all of these guys, they all have one thing in common. They had that one contract where they made a crap ton of money.
Yeah.
And it's, and we feel sorry for them on a basketball achievement level. Isaiah Thomas was a 60th overall pick. He played for a minimum deal for, I believe, 3 years before signing $21 million to $7 million a year. He never had his, my family, my entire family for generations is taken care of contract. And right as, you know, on the cusp of him getting maybe one of those contracts, he suffers a terrible injury and then gets traded. And so I really feel bad because he doesn't have, I mean, sure, he's got $20 plus million in the bank. I get it. For us working schmoes, that's a lot of money. But in terms of, like I said, generational wealth, the kind that a lot of his peers are getting, he didn't get a chance at that. And so as far as Denver as a fit, I don't know. You know, Denver already has Gary Harris and they have Jamal Murray. I look around and I see teams that could have used, you know, a point guard in a starting role. Phoenix is obviously one of them. You know, there's not a whole lot there in that position. And so, I mean, I guess I understand, given the history, that it might be a little awkward, but that was a place I think they could have used them. There's another team that also had, I'm drawing a blank now, but there's a couple of teams that had hole at point guard. Like, you guys could have used him. If it's minimum, you could have used him.
Yeah. And last question for you, Amin. You know, with all this talk, obviously there's other free agents. Let's talk about another former Nugget. Carmelo Anthony, where do you think he goes? Does he really stick with Houston? Does he make Houston better? Or does he go down, take his talents to South Beach and go to the Heat?
Well, I mean, my buddy Sham Sharani had just tweeted out that it looks like the Rockets are the front runner. I understand why. You know, obviously the Rockets are a better team. And also, you know, with the departure of Luke Richard and Bamute and obviously Trevor Ariza, they kind of have a hole at small forward. I mean, I love P.J. Tucker, but he's not going to play 38 minutes a night. So, you know, it kind of goes to almost like they need a body at that position. Having said that, I think he'd be a better fit in Miami. I'm not particularly certain that Carmelo Anthony has accepted a kind of marginal role offensively by his standards. I think going to Miami allows him to be a closer version of himself that he's known all his career, and they can subsidize him with the defense, with all the other things, with the rest of that roster. Miami needs a bucket getter like Carmelo Anthony. Whereas Houston, I don't know that offense is an issue. I think, you know, they had a historical level of offense last season, but really what made them special is that they were elite defensively. And so they lost two elite defenders. You're going to add a guy who on paper is more offense, but I don't know how much more you can add to that offense. And then defensively is going to be a step down. So I don't know if the fit's there, but I think it's one of those name brand things. Like, I'm Carmelo Anthony, that's the Houston Rockets, and they're about to win a championship, and they've got two superstars. And if you're the Houston Rockets, that's Carmelo Anthony. He's an Olympian. He's a Hall of Famer. You know, and we get three superstars. It's a lot of name brand stuff going on, but from a basketball standpoint, I'd rather see him in Miami.
Yeah, makes sense. Amin El-Hassan, great stuff as always. Thanks for the time. Enjoy the rest of Summer League.
Right.
Thanks a lot. That's Amin El-Hassan joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. That's CoulterTempe.com, Coulter on Camelback.com, and CoulterNissan.com. I feel validated that he also thought it would make some sense for Isaiah Thomas to
have been
in
here. Yeah, and especially for the price tag. That's the one thing that's the most glaring of it, is that price met need. And It feels like
it's better for Isaiah Thomas, too.
Just
rattle off a couple guys going to be playing behind in Denver, and it's like, that guy, we've seen his upside. Maybe he can't get back there again, but you don't accidentally average 29 points a game for basically, I think it was 76 games that season he played, and he was good with the Suns.
Yeah, he was really good with it. He was one of my faves on the Suns back
then. I didn't want them to trade him back then. I mean, I know it got all convoluted with all the different trades they made at once, so it's tough to sit there and measure which trades, because they were all tied together.
It was like that multi-team crossover. Yeah, it was a bunch of stuff.
But now that we don't run 9 point guards out there every night, I'd kind of like to have, as it stands right now, we're running half a point guard out there.
I would take
Isaiah Thomas. Coming up, what do we think of DeAndre Ayton's summer league? Plus, what happens at the deadline with Shelby Miller on the DL? Doug and Wolf Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Flash from the Four here, final hour of the show, live from the Auction Community Studios. Luke Lipinski, Max Starks in for Doug and Wolf. Thanks to Amin El Hassan, who just joined us. Amin's always great. He really is.
And it's more so that he's just so cool. Like, it seems like he's never bothered, and he has great commentary on questions.
He seems to bother people on Twitter without trying.
Yeah, but I don't know why.
I don't know. I mean,
you know what it is?
Phased.
It's the Darth Vader reference. That's what it is. Not a lot of people are Darth fans. You know, more people are more Rebel Alliance versus the Empire of the Galactic Order. Anyways,
is this more Star Wars?
We're not even going to get into that. Yeah.
Hey, aren't you at least happy I know who Darth Vader is?
I am excited that you know who he is.
I mean,
I've only worn Darth Vader shirts in here over the last 3 years at least a dozen times.
I've only had to hear everybody in my life tell me they're my father because of that movie. So
yeah.
I do know. I at least know who Darth Vader is. Yeah, if they have, like, asthma. So, the Diamondbacks have put Shelby Miller on the DL, TJ McFarland on the DL, and Zach Greinke right to the All-Star game because John Lester's not going to pitch. So, at this point, the Diamondbacks do have three representatives at the All-Star game, Paul Goldschmidt, Patrick Corbin, Zach Greinke. I'm with what we've seen in the last week, I'm kind of hoping that neither of them pitch.
Neither
Paul Goldschmidt,
pitch.
He can hit. That's fine. He can go out there and hit.
Yeah, you can go ahead and bang a couple in the air. But, please don't send the pitchers out. We need them. We need all those pitches that they might waste in the All-Star game.
We were doing this on the fly before, but just trying to figure out how long the Diamondbacks can go and basically hold out while they try and make a trade for a pitcher, for a starting pitcher. And I think they can make it to the 24th. Before they have to run that fifth spot in the rotation out there. If you look at the rest of this run before the All-Star break, Zach Godley, Zach Greinke, and Patrick. Wow, they really can. They need to add Zach Britton and Zach Duke, so you can just go all Zachs all the time. And that
would be pretty sweet if you could actually get through that.
So Zach Godley, Zach Greinke, Patrick Corbin for the rest of this series. That gets you to the All-Star break, and with the way the All-Star break is set up now, you don't play Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, which... Typically, we get to that Thursday and we're like, really? You need 2 days off after the All-Star game while there's no other sports going on? But this year, that means something for the Diamondbacks because their next game out of the break is a week from today, and they can essentially reset their starting rotation depending on if Greinke or Corbin pitches in that All-Star game. And so then you can go 1-4 again all the way through that Colorado series, which is huge, and through the first game of the Cubs series. So you don't need that fifth starter until July 24th. In Chicago against the Cubs. So it's either Matt Cook, it's either Clay Buchholz if he's back. Maybe they've made a trade by then. Maybe they'll make one over the next week.
I have a feeling that a trade will happen and we'll have somebody on this roster after the All-Star break. That's what I kind of feel that. I mean, obviously, you can probably go to the wire and you'll find out during the Rockies series. But somebody's getting moved in the next 8 to 9 days.
It's one of those spots where... Like, you could wait to the 31st, but...
But why?
You know, you hear that talk where it's, are you going to go out there and get a number two or number three starter? Well, that's only for the playoffs. If you don't make the playoffs, then that doesn't even matter. So if you can add a quality number four or maybe even like a low-end number three or whatever, just so you have a full rotation. I mean, at this point, I know they're only a half game out of first place, but you're in survival mode here in the second half because... I know the season doesn't end today, but if it did, you're on the outside looking in.
Yeah, you're on the outside looking in. Plus, I mean, you lost Shelby. You lost one of your starters, and the other starter's injured. So you only have four starters right now as it stands, and you need five. So just by pure mathematics, you need a fifth regardless.
You love numbers.
I do love numbers.
All right, time for the poll question.
Time to take a look at the Arizona Sports Poll Question. Brought to you by Sanderson Ford. The best play is at Sanderson Ford.
Aaron Maloney is here with the Arizona Sports Poll Question. Aaron?
Well, Max, I'm so happy you like numbers. You ready for this poll question?
Yeah.
Okay. On a scale from 1 to 10, how concerned are you with DeAndre Ayton's level of play so far?
Ooh. 1 being low, 10 being high.
Okay, so the options are 1 to 3, 4 to 6, 7 to 9, a 10, which, what? Yeah. And then not concerned.
How concerned can you be if I'm all the way to a 10?
I have to go with not concerned. I'm not concerned with this play right
now. You've got all those numbers. You're not going to use any of them?
Okay, okay.
You love numbers. You have to pick one.
Okay, so 10 being very concerned, 1 being not concerned at all?
Yeah.
I'm going to go 1 to 3.
All right.
Yeah. What do you got?
I'm not concerned.
See, we don't love numbers.
Talk about numbers.
We don't love numbers.
I love words.
That's why. Okay.
I'm pro word.
All right, let's give us the numbers on that.
So 54% say they're not concerned. 20% say a 4 to 6.
Wow.
14% 1 to 3. 8% 7 to 9. 3% a 10.
What yutz hit the 10?
3% of people are yutzes, apparently.
I think 3% of the people thought they voted for how confident are you in DeAndre. I think the 10% or the 3% just didn't really read the question.
No, they didn't.
And just saw Ayton and was like,
I thought he should average 30 and 20.
Yeah. DeAndre Ayton's a 10.
3% of people didn't read. That's what we've established.
Yeah, that's what we did.
Aaron, where are you on this? Not concerned?
Yeah, I'm really not concerned at all.
Yeah, see,
four summer league games.
And if I wasn't a numbers guy, I'd be right there with everybody else.
I can't believe
else.
You're all the way up at a 3 on your concern level.
It was a 1 to 3.
But I read that as a 3.
It should have been 0 to 3, so then I could have been in the not concerned category. Mm-hmm. And it's still a number.
You put yourself in this corner. thank you, Aaron.
Thanks, Aaron.
Meenal Haasen, when we had him on last segment, said something that stood out, too. You get some of this from watching on TV, but when you're actually there in Vegas and you're there year after year and watching how some of these players perform and then seeing what they evolve into, I mean, I think that's the biggest thing. He was able to point to the Kristaps Porzingis example from a few years ago.
This was a great example.
And it's spot on, and it really speaks to watching Summer League closely year after year, being there, and then again, seeing how that player evolves. So you can see the bigger picture with a guy like Porzingis. And as he said, Ayton's been better in these four games than Porzingis was his rookie year. But Porzingis, you could tell he was still doing the right things as a big man in those spots where maybe he wasn't even getting the ball that much because, you know, it's sort of set up for the guards in summer league.
Yeah.
And he's seen a lot of that from Ayton. Plus, Ayton is putting up better numbers, too.
Well, putting up better numbers, but what I liked is, you know, he was up there close, so he could watch the off-the-ball skills. He could watch, like you said, the footwork, the athleticism, the jumping, the contesting, all those things that we might not catch with a camera angle because they're trying to focus on the guy with the ball. He could see all those things, so he gave us an in-depth analysis of things that we might not be able to see, and then you could probably only see being up close because we're getting a full field vision view from a television.
I would have liked, looking back, to maybe see more from Eli Okobo. I know he got hurt. Just because he was the sort of player that's kind of in that middle range. Like DeAndre Ayton knows he's on the team. He knows it's the focal point of the team or one of the focal points behind Devin Booker on the team. Mikal Bridges knows that they traded a fairly significant pick to move up and get him. So he knows he's getting playing time. And on the other end of the spectrum, you have a guy like Davon Reed who's just trying to get a job somewhere in the NBA. But Okobo's kind of in that middle ground because there were people and there were basketball experts that had him rated pretty high. The Suns feel like they got him basically a steal, getting him number 31, and just didn't get to see a whole lot out of him. I know it's very limited, and I know that they still have a game today, although I don't know that he's going to play.
But I doubt that.
That would have been somebody I wanted to see a little more from. Not like he didn't do enough, just I'm curious about what's there. Coming up, what do the D-backs need to do at the deadline, and what is the latest on Shelby Miller? We're going to ask D-backs beat writer for MLB.com, Steve Gilbert, next. Doug and Wolf Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Luke Lipinski, Max Starks in for Doug and Wolf, and we are joined now on the Coulter Automotive Group sports line by D-backs beat writer for MLB.com, Steve Gilbert. Steve, with the All-Star break here just a couple days away, are you holding up better than the Diamondbacks bullpen?
I tell you what, guys, it was a long week with that 20-5 game and then the 16-inning game and then the 19-2 game. It was quite. It's been quite a week on the Diamondbacks' beat. That's for sure.
Yeah, it has been a roller coaster. So now that we are talking about bullpen, how do you see this shaking up? I mean, for them going into this last series against the Braves, and not to say it's decimated, but it's been greatly hampered, especially when you consider Shelby Miller going on the DL, McFarland on the DL. What is the best-case scenario for this team out of this Atlanta series?
Well, I think certainly what's happened over the last couple weeks in terms of the 3-7 homestand and losing 2 out of 3 to the Rockies right after that makes these games in Atlanta, you know, not crucial, but, you know, important going into the break. I think they would like to finish the first half on a little bit of a good feeling with a little bit of momentum heading into the second half. It's always best to do it that way. They got a couple of reinforcements yesterday, and Matt Cook and Silvino Bracho, and the bullpen wasn't overtaxed yesterday. So they should be okay for the weekend. But I think the bigger question is, you know, looking long term now, if Shelby's out, if they're going to have some hiccups like they did, do they need to look at pitching before the deadline, as opposed to adding to everybody wants them to add to the lineup? But I think that if this little stretch has proven anything, I think it would be that you can never have too many arms. And I think they might turn their attention more so towards the pitching end of things.
Nothing official, obviously, has been put out there other than just that Shelby Miller is on the DL, but you read some of the quotes and you try and read between the lines, it doesn't sound like they necessarily expect him back anytime soon, and maybe this could be a long-term thing. Is that fair to assess? And then if that is the case, I mean, how far can they go in the next week or so before they actually have to get back to that pitching spot in the rotation?
Yeah, hard to know with Shelby. You know, obviously it's never good when you're coming back from Tommy John surgery and you leave a game with elbow tightness. But we'll wait and see. Maybe it could just be scar tissue. Maybe it could be, you know, whatever. It might be something minor. But I think what's in the back of their head right now is if they're missing Shelby Miller for a few starts or however long it is. Clay Buchholz is making progress on his rehab. He was through a sim game, and then they were going to sit down and decide what they wanted to do as far as a rehabilitation assignment for him. The All-Star break comes at a great time for them with all of this because, you know, they're not going to need that Shelby spot in the rotation until after the All-Star break. That gives Clay Buchholz a chance to have a rehab start, and they can see if he's ready to just slide right back in there into the rotation. And if not, they could use, you know, say Matt Cook or somebody like that until Buchholz was ready.
Yeah, and, you know, we talked about this. I mean, obviously, you know, pitching being the forefront if you're thinking about trade deadline, but I mean, they also haven't had great offensive output games in that stretch of those losses. I mean, you look at game one of the Rockies was 5-3, and that was, of course, you know, propelled by a Peralta 3-run homer. But after that, I mean, it's 24-2 in those two showings. I mean, offense gets off to an early start, you know, getting a 1-0 in both of the last two contests, but then nothing after that. So, I mean, is a bat still pretty high still? I mean, you have to think, even though you have this lineup pretty set, it's still not producing the numbers we're expecting.
Yeah, it's been inconsistent. I think it's probably the best way to say that. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure they would love to add a bat, particularly a bat like, you know, Manny Machado. But, you know, they have limited resources, too, in terms of what they're able to trade to get a bat or to get a pitcher. And so it'd be interesting to see how they juggle all of that. Steven Souza, you know, there have been some encouraging signs. I mean, they hit the ball harder on Thursday, the day game in Colorado, and Steven Souza seems like he's swinging the bat better. If they could get him going, you know, and then with Pollock and Goldschmidt, you know, that's a good middle of the lineup in addition to Jake Lamb, and Peralta's been pretty consistent all year long. So it's been a little bit of a mystery as to, you know, why that offense hasn't been clicking now that they have Pollock and Souza back.
Talking to MLB.com, Steve Gilbert. Steve, with Patrick Corbin going to the All-Star game and Paul Goldschmidt as well, and now Zach Greinke, specifically with the pitchers, I know Torey Lovello said that he would make Corbin available to pitch an inning if they really needed him to, but, I mean, with what we've seen over the last week, what's the likelihood that either of those guys throws anything in that game? Because the Diamondbacks kind of need them coming out of the break, too.
Yeah, you know, the deal is if you're a Sunday starter like Corbin was, you have to agree that you can pitch an inning in the All-Star game. And so everybody had to sign off on that. So for Patrick to go to the game, he needs to, you know, be at least available. Now, it could be a situation where he doesn't end up seeing action. You know, Robbie Ray didn't see action last year in his All-Star when he went to the All-Star game. So that's possible. Greinke's a little different deal because he throws on Saturday. So, you know, he's going to have a few more. He's going to have one more day than Patrick as far as that goes. And I know he was he joked to us yesterday that he thought he was being selected. You know, he's had quite a run at the plate recently. He joked that he was being selected as a pinch hitter, pinch runner. So with the stolen bases that he's had recently. But I think the chances probably that Greinke sees action more so than Corbin, but that Corbin could also see an inning's worth of work. And I think the Diamondbacks will, you know, certainly hold their breath on something like that, but it was something that everybody kind of signed off on.
Now, you know, and how do we have to view the Diamondbacks, especially after this performance in Colorado, coming out of the break and having the Rockies at home for three games? You know, how important is that for them coming out of the break to get off to a hot start and kind of reclaim themselves from their showing at Coors Field?
Yeah, you know, it would be nice for them to get off to that start, especially depending on how these next 3 days go and where the standings are. I mean, those division games now take on added importance just because, you know, surprisingly, I think there's four teams, you know, still right there, kind of bunched together. So that's important for them. They go to Chicago after that for four games with the Cubs. And that's a big series because that's a really good team. And I think if there's been one thing the Diamondbacks have struggled at this year, it's beating teams that have above 500 records. If you look at their record, they're below 500 against teams with 500 or better records. So it, certainly coming out of the break, there's no easy give me the first two series.
Steve, last question for you. When you look at this team now and the way they're set up, and we talked to Derek Hall the other day, and he was saying, you know, it's tough to assess because they haven't really had the lineup fully healthy. Now they do. When you look at the second half of the season, in terms of offense, who do you think is the most important for this team among guys that they haven't been getting production from, like Jake Lamb or Steven Souza? Who are they counting on the most out of that group?
Well, I think you hit both those guys. I mean, I think they when they traded for Souza, they were really looking for him to kind of give them, be a force in the lineup. And I think you saw in Colorado a little bit of what they saw in him. You know, he hit the ball hard. He can run the bases a little bit. So I think that he is certainly a key, and Jake Lamb's also a huge key for them from the left side of the plate. So I think those are the two guys they're looking to from an offensive standpoint. I think pitching wise, you'd look at Robbie Ray had a decent outing yesterday, and I think he's somebody that they would love to see him get back to the Robbie Ray of last year. That would really give that rotation a huge boost.
Yeah, that'd be nice. All right, Steve Gilbert, good stuff as always. Enjoy the last series here before the All-Star break.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a great weekend.
Thanks a lot. You too. Steve Gilbert of MLB.com, who joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. That's CoulterTempe.com, Coulter on Camelback.com, and CoulterNissan.com. When we come back, one last look at the Summer League. The Suns have one last game. We'll wrap the show up next. Luke Lipinski, Max Starks, in for Doug and Wolf on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. Fix the TV, and we've got Good Morning Football's top five breakout players of 2018. Number five, and the TV's almost gone again.
Yeah.
Just long enough to show us that it's Buda Baker. Didn't he already break out last year?
Yeah, he had a breakout rookie campaign, but I think they're anticipating more because that was, out of seven games. A full season out of him. But yeah, Peter Schrager's debuting his breakout list. And of course, another NFC West rival is number four, DeForest Buckner. So it's cool. We got the TV working. It was something noteworthy to the Valley.
Yeah, Buda Baker is like one of the guys I've seen most on Twitter that's upset with his Madden rating.
Really?
Yeah.
I said that. See, I told you he was more upset than Leonard Fournette was.
Yeah, I don't know he's more upset than Leonard Fournette.
Well, Leonard Fournette actually was tweeting at EA Sports multiple times.
The response they gave him, now I can't find it, but it was this generic response that was like, greetings, unhappy NFL player or something. Yeah. And then it was like this like fill in the blank of like, you are angry, really angry, threatening to leave
for
the
complaints
game.
On your Madden rating, press one.
That's basically what it was. It was the written form of that.
Yeah, it was.
It was an automated text message back
to
the
I'd like to believe that he actually probably tried to call them too. Went to the EA Sports website and hit the contact us page at the bottom.
This is where he's going to take a stand, right?
Yeah, exactly.
He's dialing the phone angrily on the touch
screen. I'm planting my flag on this one.
To the Summer League, we had Amin El-Hassan on earlier this hour, and I thought this was interesting, his comparison of what he has seen from DeAndre Ayton through four games.
I told this story on our podcast at Hoop Collective on ESPN about watching Kristaps Porzingis at his first Summer League, and his numbers didn't pop out, but watching him play... one of the hardest things is for bigs to play at Summer League because it's a very guard-driven environment, meaning the ball's in the guard's hands. Often these guards either A, aren't very good, or B, aren't very experienced. Either way, for them, that means ignoring the bigs a lot. So for big guys at Summer League, a lot of times, they get frustrated and then kind of just get lost in the sauce because why should I set screens hard? Why should I do all the right things if I'm never rewarded for it, if my teammates never look at me?
Makes a lot of sense. Maybe not something you would think about on first glance, but it's good to hear a specific name in a comparison like that and a realistic one. And yeah. It's not saying I did not get the feel from Amin El-Hassan that he was saying DeAndre Ayton's going to be Kristaps Porzingis. Their games are a little bit different.
Yeah.
But we had that poll question where you're asking how concerned are you after the four games that DeAndre Ayton has played in the Summer League, because they've kind of been a little all over the place. The first one was shaky. The next two were pretty good. And the one yesterday was, it's fine. But you see flashes of what he's capable of doing. And so I think the test with him is going to be, it's going to be twofold. You're going to be maybe frustrated at times out of the gate, maybe not, with seeing how good he can be and just waiting for him to get it all together and be consistently great. And then the other one, and this is probably going to feed into that first one, is how often can the guards on this team get him the ball? That's going to be a concern to start the year. That's not really his fault, but it doesn't matter whose fault it is if it limits his production.
Yeah, if it limits his effectiveness to help the Suns win, it's going to be an object of attention. But like you said, we have half a point guard, Brandon Knight, and then we have Devin Booker. So I think there are going to be more opportunities. You know, he said also, you know, about how, you know, and this is a guard-centered summer league and bigs kind of get often left in the background. But the fact that he made himself a focal point throughout it is best word I guess I should say. I mean, it sounds good. It sounds good. It sounds like it's trending in the right direction. And to have Amin El-Hassan there, who's watched these games live and has watched the off-the-ball skills, you know, and they also alluded to, you know, how's he going to do off pick and rolls? That's going to be a big focal point for him. And he can create space and he can seal out guys to where he is that second option. So there's a lot of creative things that can be done. And once you get to the NBA season, you know, you're going against the top-level talent. And he's not going to be as much a focal point on this team, but he's going to be relied upon to be that 2-3 scorer on the squad, on the court. So we want to see that progression, and we want to see how he's actually going to respond to that.
If you had a concern with the Suns taking a big man, I mean, your only real option, realistically, at the top of this draft would have been Luka Doncic, because all the other good players up there were big men, too.
Yeah.
But if you had that concern, I think the most legitimate aspect of it was, is his effectiveness going to be limited on the Suns his first year or two for what we're saying, that maybe they can't get him the ball as efficiently as they need to? Now, when you draft a guy number one overall, you're thinking big picture, and obviously the plan is to go out there and get a point guard, whether you draft one next year, although I hope that's not the plan. I hope you're going out there and getting an established vet. You don't have any money left for this year.
Yeah.
So it's, if you're going to bring in somebody that is,
even though apparently Isaiah Thomas would have been available money-wise.
That's kind of where I was going with that. We looked at that list of 2019 free agents with Bobby Marks earlier in the week, and there's some good names out there. So that's probably the way they're going to go. But if you're going to go that way, you could have brought in Isaiah Thomas. I got to be honest. When I walked in here this morning, I thought everybody was going to look at me like you're an idiot for wanting Isaiah Thomas back. Everybody agreed with me. And Amin Al-Hassan was kind of on board, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I mean, because when you look at what was out there. What was available
to you?
There's
not much out there.
There's not much out there, and he's a bright spot, and he's a known commodity. And he's actually played for the Suns. So you know what you're kind of getting.
He was good for the Suns,
He was good for the Suns. He didn't have an unceremonious exit, you know, that was just riddled with, why are we bringing this guy back here? He was bad for us before. No, he was a great guy, and it's just kind of circumstantial how he left. So you at least think, okay, well, there's a chance to get him. I'm sure probably everybody thought he was going to go for higher than what he ended up signing for with the Nuggets. But why he agreed with the Nuggets, you know, you'd like to know if the Suns actually threw a bone out there or a feeler just to see what he was thinking beforehand, because he's going into a very deep Denver Nuggets roster and he's going to kind of get lost in the wash.
That's the thing. I'm sure there's people out there screaming at the radio right now, like, we don't want Isaiah Thomas back. That didn't work the first time. I don't think that didn't work because of Isaiah Thomas. I think that they were trying a weird experiment that didn't work. And then when they panicked and tried to change everything up, he got lost in the shuffle. I'm not saying I would have gone out there and been like, we got to get Isaiah Thomas. This guy's the answer. I'm not saying that. But he got 1 year and $2 million from Denver. So look at this logically. Denver doesn't need him as much as a team like the Suns. And there's a couple other teams, but the Suns are the only ones I really care about in this position.
Yeah, exactly.
From Isaiah Thomas's perspective, he's going to go to Denver where it's not really a great chance for him to resurrect his career. He can, but he's not going to get a ton of playing time with the pieces they already have in place. I'm not saying he would have got a ton of playing time here either, but this is a better chance for him to sort of get back on track and maybe get a bigger deal somewhere else next year. And I'm assuming at that point the Suns are going after Kemba Walker or somebody else anyway.
Yeah, and help a young team along the way, given his experience and his role and obviously the level of competition. I think it doesn't hurt to have leadership with a guy who's seasoned in this league and has played all around this league, and with a bunch of different guys, that leadership experience that he has cannot be overstated with a very young roster. And you think of who the contributors are going to be next year, 21 and under.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, proven commodity in the sense that we've seen what he can do. We've seen his upside. But if you were signing him right now, you'd be buying as low as possible. It's like buying a stock that has soared in the past at its absolute just bottoming out point. So, and he's got something to prove. I like the players that have something to prove.
A little killer instinct and a little blood in his eyes.
Nothing wrong with that. All right. Time for the U.
How did the show make you feel?
Woo!
Doug and Wolf's. The U. Brought to you by Carol Royce. If you want to learn how to sell your house for top dollar, go to carolhasthebuyers.com.
Well, you must hate that song every single day.
I know. It's...
with your,
I'm all the way out in Arizona, and I have to still deal with Miami.
Yeah.
BS.
So. It's almost like it was just for you. What's your... I'll give you mine real quick. Leonard Fournette, 87's not good enough, and he's taking action.
I'm going to go with Cassie Hubbard is a way bigger sneakerhead than I ever imagined.
But probably not a bigger sneakerhead than you.
No, she is.
Oh,
she
really?
Is. I mean, because I wear a size 19, so I mean, I can't really be a sneakerhead because I can't find shoes in my size.
Okay, so you're limited.
Yeah, but mentally, I'm a huge sneakerhead.
Okay. Well, that's all that really matters.
Yeah, it is.
All right, that's going to do it for us here. Thanks to Aaron Maloney and Cody Fincher behind the glass for Max Starks. I'm Luke Lipinski. Bickley and Murata next on 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Have a good weekend.